the pipeline that we have of several molecules, the way they have been chemically engineered is that they would self-assemble into larger supramolecular structures. So that is basically the platform. And this discovery platform is based upon a computing platform technology which is called Volvox. So Volvox is actually a conglomeration of several unicellular organisms that grow together, okay? So there are different subunits, as each subunit is an individual unicellular organism that come together and function as a unit. So taking that concept forward, what we have done is looked at the molecules that are out there for chemotherapy today, and we figured out what are the issues with those molecules, because there are so many that have been discovered over the last 30, 40 years. And then try to tease out each of these problems that are associated with the molecules that are out there today, and try to fix it with a computational technology first, theory-based, and then took it to our synthetic platform and synthesized them and tested them out in biology. So what happened as a result is that we have a deep pipeline of cytotoxic drugs, targeted therapeutics, and immunotherapy. And all of these molecules, whenever a scientist comes forward with an idea, what our business development team, scientific team, and our patent cell, what they do is they immediately file a provisional application to protect this idea. And then there is 1 year time given to substantiate this idea with data. If the data come through, the next stage is started, obviously. If the data don't come through, then that is dropped. So in this manner, although we have started, the very first experiment that we ran at Invictus was 17th October 2011. But in this span of time, we have like 8 or 9 applications, that patent applications that have happened from Invictus itself. This is in addition to the technologies that we have in-licensed from elsewhere. So what happens is that using our supercomputing platform technology, Volvox, we've tried to take out the issues that are associated with the conventional chemotherapy, and this has resulted, at least in our hands, in our preclinical testing, the efficacy of these drugs, concomitantly reducing the side effects. So why would we even need a new anti-cancer drug, right? To overcome the issues of the drugs that have been used today, combinations have been tried. Take two different therapies and try in the same individual. What happens is that with that kind of combinations, there are some benefits, but there are huge side effects. So there are some risks associated with the benefits. And this benefit-risk weighing doesn't give that much of an advantage with the combination chemotherapy that's out there. Then a recent technology, although it has been carried out on the bench for the last 2 decades or so, but the approvals have happened in the last two or three years, are antibody drug conjugates, where the cytotoxic payload is conjugated to an antibody which recognizes a particular protein that is expressed only on cancer cells. So the cytotoxic payload will be delivered to those cancer cells expressing that particular antigen. Now the caveat of that beautiful method is that yes, it produces side effects, but also that amount of payload is delivered to the cells that is actually reaching the cells through the antigen-antibody interaction. So sometimes this delivery of payload is not enough. So for that, what people conventionally use for making these antibody drug conjugates is that they'll take very, very toxic molecules, which are otherwise not approved for human use. So methansinoids, okay? Very, very toxic molecules. Now what happens, usually the ADCs, if they are working, you will get a good effect, the patients will do well. But more often than not, these ADCs land in non-cancerous cells. For example, there is one ADC that has recently been approved from Genentech, which is now acquired by Roche, of course, which is called Katsila. This one, well, it was tried in a head and neck clinical trial. The tumors, the head and neck tumors were taken care of. But the patients who were responding so well to the treatment, they had huge skin problem. In fact, some of the patients lost their skin. And the drugs had to be withdrawn. The third method that has been tried is liposomal and nanoformulations. People are trying that. There are issues with stability of these formulations that have been made, and there is limited tumor targeting with whatever is out there. And some surgical applications of local delivery where the drug is directly injected into the tumor. Obviously, those tumors that you cannot access, those have limited applicability for that. Now, because of these issues where the current technologies are not being able to overcome the problems, what Invictus is trying is they're applying their supramolecular technology to design innovative and effective the supramolecular cancer therapeutics. So what we are designing are basically molecules where, of course, the active moiety of any drug is retained, but to this drug, what we are tethering are hydrophobic moieties, such as lipids, like cholesterol. Now, when many of these molecules come together, then they self-assemble through supramolecular hydrophobic-hydrophilic interactions. If the drug is hydrophilic, then there will be a bilayer forming through the drug itself. It's not active loading of the drug into another envelope. And these molecules are designed in such a way that they self-assemble. So just to take you back to the picture, of course, this is an older snapshot of the World Health Organization webpage, where this number of the number of people that have died from cancer was 7.6 million in 2008. In 2012, it is 8.2 million. But what is notable from here is that approximately 70% of all the cancer deaths occur in low and middle income countries. So when we think that cancer is not affecting countries like India so much, we have to think again. You know, we hear that esophageal cancers, gastric cancers are more common in China, colorectal cancers are more common in the US. But actually, if you look at the number of cancer deaths, India is really getting affected also. In fact, cancer mortality currently is at 8%, and this will increase to 12.5% as predicted by WHO in India in the next 20 years. And all the new drugs, I mean, don't consider the generics that are being developed here, but all the new drugs that are being developed in the West are extremely expensive and not accessible at all for most of us. So there is an urgent need for developing anti-cancer drugs in India. Just to give you an idea of the costs associated with some of the new drugs, this is Avastin. This is $7,000 per dose. This is anti-EGFR, this is 4,500 per dose. This is Zalcori, which is used in lung cancer, certain type of lung cancer, $9,600 per month. And this is used in renal cancer, $4,300 per dose. I mean, even we don't have to think about the people living below the poverty line. You know, if we think of people, most of the people are not going to be able to afford any kind of these treatments. So of course, one solution is, you know, like the way for this particular drug, Nexavar or Sorafenib, what was done, this was approved in 2013, and what was done in India is that this 2.8 lakh drug was reduced in price by the government of India for 9,000 rupees. So yes, it will benefit those renal cancer patients who are in India will be benefited by this lowering of cost. What happens is that the amount of money that is needed to develop a drug, that is not going to come through. What about all the other cancers that require all the other drugs? Tarceva and Zalcori are used in lung cancer. Lung cancer is among one of the highest cancer-related deaths in India. So this can happen for one or two drugs. This is not really an effective solution for treating all the cancer patients. So what we thought at Invictus is that let's take up a program, let's get people together, who are thinking along the same lines, and let's see if we can do it from India, okay? And this was long before Make It in India buzz started. This was before that time. So some of the people got together and figured out, okay, this is the expertise that we have. Somebody has expertise in chemistry, somebody has expertise in vivo animal work, somebody has expertise in business development. Let's see what we can do. Is there a solution that we can come up with? So one of the drugs that's out there in the market for a very long time is used in 70% of all cancers. So these are the platinum drugs. There are three different kinds of platinum drugs that have been developed over time. Cisplatin, this was the earliest one. It has severe renal and neurotoxicity. But it's used as first line of treatment across many cancers. But because of its toxicity, carboplatin was developed. And this was somewhat able to overcome the renal toxicity. But what happened was the efficacy was also not as great. Then a third kind was approved a few years ago, oxaliplatin, but recently even this has become off patent, and this has been approved only for one indication, metastatic colorectal cancer. And then these are for the first line, and then for the second or third line of treatment, many of these drugs are used. So why would we need a new platinum drug? All current platinum chemotherapies, as I just explained, are toxic to the kidneys. And because of these toxicities, what happens is the doctors cannot prescribe enough medicine for the patients. So the drug cannot be administered in effective doses. And also another complicating factor is that the patients, even if they are responding to the therapy, they develop resistance. So it seemed like that, okay, here is this drug that has been around for some time. There are three different versions of it. Still, it is not as effective as one would like. So is it an opportunity for us to explore? So we thought that with our platform technology, we'll see through insights of chemistry whether we can improve upon the existing platinum drugs. And also we thought that the second problem of patients developing resistance, we are going to analyze this and see if we can design the molecule in a better way to be able to overcome this resistance. So before I go into what we have done, just to give a brief introduction as to how these molecules work. So this is cisplatin, very simple molecule. These are the two chloride atoms, the leaving groups. Then the second generation was carboplatin, and the third one was oxaliplatin. Okay. So the way it works is that for cisplatin, the chloride is replaced by OH. This leads to the activation of the cisplatin moiety, and that goes and binds to the DNA. Now this process is called acquisition. It's an extremely fast process. And look at the size of the molecule. This can go anywhere in any part of the body. So because of this rapid acquisition process, not only is it killing the tumor cells, but it's also killing the normal cells. So in carboplatin, the chloride was replaced with oxygen, and this formed dicarboxylate bonds with platinum. Now, so you can well imagine that compared to this acquisition process, this is going to be much slower, but this would also lower the efficacy. And with oxaliplatin, the same dicarboxylate bonds with platinum and oxygen was maintained, but another thing was added, a diaminocyclohexane ring. What it did was that certain patients who developed resistance would be because this platinum would be forming lesions with the DNA, and the DNA repair enzymes would come and repair it. So if such a large group was hanging out of this, then the DNA repair enzymes cannot get access. So some of those resistant patients would respond better to oxaliplatin, and therefore it was found that in metastatic colorectal cancer, who are resistant to normal platinum, would respond to oxaliplatin, and therefore it was approved for that. So what we thought would be that, you know, we were going to try and ensure that there is more uptake of the drug into the tumor as compared to the normal tissues. So enhanced uptake of drug, preferential loading in tumor, this would obviously limit the toxicity. The other thing that we wanted to play with is controlled release of the drug. So we've also, so cisplatin equation process is extremely fast. Carboplatin and oxaliplatin equation process is slower to slow the efficacy, to lower the efficacy also. Can we achieve something in between? Okay. So for the enhanced uptake, what we did was we attached to this oxaliplatin moiety cholesterol through a linker. And this linker and cholesterol attachment gave an amphiphilic character to the molecule. And then we also played with the coordination of the platinum. And just one more thing I want to mention through this diagram, and then I'll explain what kinds of structures we were looking at, is that you can now imagine if this works, then you can put any drug here, any linker here, and any hydrophobic moiety here. So it's a complete modular structure with plug and play approach. This is our prototype molecule, but if it works, it, we can extend it across a large number of molecules that cause toxicity. So for the platinum drugs, we tried different coordination environments. We tried oxygen platinum, quaternary nitrogen to platinum, sulfur platinum, and then NO platinum. And we figured out through lots of screening studies, in silico screening, as well as biology screening, we figured out that this was giving the controlled release of the active part of the drug in a manner that we are seeing maximum efficacy. So we proceeded with the class 2. Now for, so far so good for, you know, figuring out a molecule to work with. Now in an industry setting, whenever you're trying to design a molecule, in the design itself, you have to think of the scale-up. You have to think of the characterization. So there are many ways to characterize, you know, a given molecule. So what happened was many countries got together and they created what is known as an international conference on harmonization or ICH guidelines for structural elucidation of any molecule. And for that guideline, for taking up any molecule to the clinic, these have to be satisfied to the level that they recommend. So IR, UV vis, proton NMR, C13 NMR, mass and elemental analysis. So you can imagine a small startup with a 5 crore seed money hardly had enough money to do any of these things. You know, we had none of these instruments, none of the capabilities, none of the resources to carry out these. And of course, we explored many places in Delhi. We are situated in Delhi, so there are lots of labs in Delhi that actually you know, do NMRs and try to figure out concentrations of certain elements. But they always do this in terms of figuring out the pollutant level of a certain, you know, I don't know, sewerage. Or maybe they're analyzing fuel for certain elements. So they need like, you know, 1 gram of substance, 1 ml of substance. And we are, you know, at the initial levels, we're just synthesizing maybe, you know, 10 mg, 20 mg. Okay. So it was very difficult to get any of these companies to understand, you know, how to analyze all of these things. And we also reached out to institutes in Delhi. There was lots of, you know, paperwork to be navigated. So what happened was finally it was figured out that with Dr. Shadim Mondal, many of you would be knowing him, at ICER Kolkata, we set up an MOU as well as, you know, we sort of had an industry-academia collaboration where we gave a grant to them to be able to carry out these kinds of analysis on a regular basis for our compounds. So for any compound that we synthesize, a courier guy comes, takes our samples and takes it to ICER Kolkata. And within the next day, the data come on our computer. So this way we figured out, these were some of our lead molecules that we wanted to go forward with. And this is just the API, by the way. So now we have to go through the entire self-assembly. For that, we set up another collaboration with Dr. Sudeep Roy. We're basically using a computational platform, the one that I was talking about, Volvox. A lot of parameters were fed into their programming, and the force fields were made for our API, for cholesterol, for various phospholipids, and the bilayer structure was simulated, and the stability of the structure through these parameters were analyzed. So any bilayer through the mixing and matching of components of the supramolecule, if it shows a wavy kind of pattern or ripples that was unstable, and if it showed no ripples like the one shown here over, you know, this is 70 nanoseconds snapshot, we have this over more than 500 nanoseconds with no ripples, that predicted a stable bilayer structure. So I showed you these molecules that were that we synthesized and characterized. So of these four, IO-125 was predicted by this platform to have the most stable supramolecular structure. So this is basically what IO-125 supramolecular formulation is. This is IO-125, DSP-PEG, and HSPC, which is a phospholipid. And this is a high-resolution TEM. Here you can see the clear bilayer formation. And this is the DNS profile of this supramolecular formulation. Mostly the particles were of the range 100 to 110 nanometers. So now, if you think that, is it going to be compartmentalized away from normal organs, then you need to think that the nephron size in a kidney is around 5.5 nanometer, the nephron 4. Whereas, if you look at a tumor cell vasculature, so this is a blood vessel going over, say, normal cells, where the endothelial cells are lined up and organized really well, and this is the tumor, where the blood vessels are really disorganized, okay? So they create large pores. So a 100-110 nanometer size particle would easily go through these pores of this vasculature. This is known as an enhanced permeation and retention effect. And because of this, the drug is not going to be loaded into the, because of the size, the drug is not going to be loaded into the normal tissues. And we also saw one more thing, that here is a cell, a cancer cell, and on the membrane of this cell, these green green dots over here are actually stained with an antibody called caveolin 1. So caveolin are basically pits on the cell membrane. Okay, this blue is the nucleus, and our drug was fluorescently labeled as red. So you can see a bunch of the drug molecules inside the cell through the normal transporters of platinum drugs. But what you also see if you look carefully, that these pits are not just green, they actually have the red inside these green pits, and therefore they are yellow. So over here you can see, for example, that a drug molecule is sitting in one of those caveolin pits. And this kind of caveolin mediated endocytosis was something that we saw across the cancer cells. And when we measured the platinum content of the cells treated with our molecule IO-125 versus standard platinum drugs such as oxaliplatin, you can see that it is really way higher for our drug. These are again different cell lines. So be it ovarian or hepatocellular or breast cancer, IO-125 uptake into these cells is way higher than oxaliplatin. So then we wanted to check the efficacy of IO-125 in multiple tumor models. So this is an in vitro, meaning that the cells were treated with the drug. And this is COV3 or ovarian cancer line. MDMB-231 is a triple negative breast cancer line. And this CP20 is a platinum resistant line. Now, on the y-axis, you have cell viability plotted against the concentration of the drug. And you can see that all the blue lines are the IO-125 treatment arm. And the cells are dying way more efficiently in IO-125 treated cells compared to oxaliplatin shown in green. So, and again, I just showed you that the uptake is also higher. So, this higher uptake of IO-125 in the cells is leading to higher killing of these cells. So, now we got three different indications. We tested it across the cell lines and we got three different indications: ovarian, triple negative, as well as liver cancer, as things that we could follow up clinically. So we looked at the clinical scenario. Triple negative breast cancer, including India, is 15% of all breast cancers. Now, you know that if somebody gets a diagnosis of breast cancer, of course it is bad news, but also breast cancer is largely curable. So there are standard drugs that are used, and over the years, the long-term survival for breast cancer treatment is very good. Yeah, that is what I'm coming to. So the triple negative breast cancer means that the three receptors that are used to target in most breast cancer, that is estrogen receptor, progesterone receptor, and HER2 receptor, these three are missing. So the standard drugs that are used for breast cancer therapy are not going to be effective in triple negative breast cancer. Now what happens is, upon diagnosis, the median survival is only 13 months. The cancer is extremely aggressive. Within few months, it metastasizes. You can see the numbers over here. The metastatic disease is 14,000 individuals in a year in US, 17,000 in Europe, and early disease 30,000 in US and 40,000 in Europe. There is no standard of care. None of the drugs work. Certain inhibitors are in development, but we don't know the long-term survival of the patients who will take this treatment. So this is a really, if somebody is diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer, as things stand up today, as the therapies that are available, the survival is not beyond 1 year. Look at hepatocellular carcinoma. The worldwide cases per year is 600,000, okay? And the 5-year survival is less than 20% for these 600,000 cases. And of these 600,000 cases, 67% occur in the Far East, mostly China, but our country is also impacted. Sorafenib, the Nexavar, the drug that is reduced by the Indian government in price, this is approved for liver cancer. But this also doesn't give long-term survival. So these are the two indications. Triple negative, we want to see globally because it's a global problem. And hepatocellular, we want to position in India/Asia and develop our molecules. So the rationale for selecting a platinum drug for triple negative breast cancer was that in the recent years, it has been seen that in triple negative breast cancer patients, there are germline BRCA1 or 2 mutations. And any patient that is carrying this mutation responds well to platinum drugs. But the problem is, either the patients develop resistance to the platinum drugs, or what happens is that the side effects are so toxic that the patient cannot continue. So this seemed like an unmet need that is out there that can be targeted by IO-125. Our IO-125 shows greater efficacy than the currently approved platinum drugs in triple negative breast cancer, and I showed you it works well in platinum resistant cancer. And this is, we anticipate that this is because I showed you the cavalier mediated internalization of our drug, and this is uncommon from the platinum drugs. So the resistance that is happening through some sort of a efflux mechanism or some sort of a pump not working for these mutant cells, IO-125 can enter through the cavulin, which is still working. And therefore, it can work in the platinum-resistant cancers. So across, this is like a panel of 6 different triple negative breast cancer lines. And you can see that the IC50 means that the concentration of drug at which 50% of the cells are viable is the lowest for IO-125 across all these 6 lines. And if you look at the cavulin expression, which is shown by the gray bar, mostly the cavulin expression is high. I mean, by far in these two cell lines, but even in the last two also it is high. So there seems to be some correlation with higher cavulin expression and more effectiveness of IO-125. So up to here, this was fine. We had a great chemistry team. We had a great chemistry setup. We had, you know, somewhat set up a small biology facility also where we could test cell lines. We were self-sufficient. But when we reached a point where we have developed, you know, a series of molecules that are doing well in a certain indication that we want to pursue as our, you know, as our approach, at that point you have to dial in animal studies. So I told you our first experiment was run in October of 2011. By January of 2012, anticipating that, you know, at some point we have to go for in vivo studies, we had submitted our animal house approval to CPCSEA, the Ministry of Environments and Forest, who approves these things. By 2013 September, so that means 1 year and 9 months, nothing had happened. After follow-ups, after, you know, I don't know, we used to go there at least three times. Since it's in Delhi, it was easy for us. We used to go there 2 to 3 times a week, sit there for 2 to 3 hours. We used to take turns and do that. Nothing was progressing. They will say this document, that document, and we were not getting the approval, and they were not even telling us why we are not getting the approval. We approached several institutes that we knew that, you know, they have very nice animal facilities. Now you have to go to an institute that has a dependable animal facility. If there are infections in their animal house, or if the animal strain is not believable, then the results are not believable. So we picked those institutes that have great animal facilities, as we know, and we approached them. And then they asked us, you know, we were like, at that point of time, we were not even 10 members, okay. That they asked us that, okay, you can use our animal facility, what can you do for us? And these are institutes that have been around for 20 years. So we don't have an answer. We just said that, you know, when we develop our capacities, maybe if you have a molecule, we can scale up. Right now, we don't know how to. So, you know, no institutes were ready to help us with the animal facility. Then we went to CROs. With whatever, by that time, we were exhausting most of our money. So we went to CROs, whatever little money we could, put into this study. One very well-known CRO based in Delhi, they conducted the experiment for us. Our scientists went every day to monitor.
What is a CRO?
CRO is a contract research organization. They will carry out the experiments for you and give you the results. And it was discovered by our scientists that they had given us mice that were left over from a previous experiment for another client. So these mice had already undergone some treatment, we don't know what. And they gave us those mice. So we were really frustrated. Then one day, of course, we asked Professor Mashulkar to help us, and he tried to also cajole them to at least move the paperwork, tell them. Then one day I just got really frustrated and walked into their office, and after waiting like 1.5 hours, you know, they were still having lunch. So I just walked in and I said, you know, I'm waiting for 1.5 hours. Somebody just tell me the status of my file. And they were just laughing and whatever. So then I said, you know, can one of you tell me that in the 1 hour, I'm not even considering 1.5, in the 1 hour, how many patients worldwide have died of cancer? How many people have died? Can anybody guess the number in this 1 hour? That nobody could guess, of course, but I knew the number. 650 people die in 45 minutes. You can, there are tickers, you know, that go live, that every patient is dying of cancer. It is really pathetic. So anyway, after all of that tantrums, finally we got the approval. And of course, you know, the molecules were already showing promise. So basically then we saw that when we compared IO-125 with oxaliplatin, this is a mouse model where we injected 10 mg per kg of oxaliplatin and 10 mg per kg Io-125, and the area under the curve for Io-125 is way higher than oxaliplatin, indicating that there is more drug available for the tumor cells to take up. And in an in vitro assay where we took plasma, this is not an animal study, where we took plasma and we incubated the plasma with either oxaliplatin or Io-125, and we measured by LC-MS-MS how much of the drug, how much of the intact drug was left. After 5 hours, all of oxaliplatin was converted to aquated diaminocyclohexane, the active moiety of the drug, in the plasma itself. It hadn't gone into the tumors. So within the plasma only it gets aquated and gets converted. But Io-125 is completely stable in plasma. So then we tried out different doses of our drug, and all of our experiments show significantly increased area under the curve, longer terminal half-life and lower clearance. And all of these result in enhanced tumor accumulation of Io-125 over oxaliplatin. And this is what the results show. So this is a triple negative breast cancer model in mice. So these are mouse triple negative breast cancer cells implanted in mice. Okay, these are, this is the control arm. We used the lethal dose for oxaliplatin. So therefore here you can see the this 5 mg per kg of oxaliplatin is actually killing the animals off, and our drug at a much higher levels we can inject, and the tumors not only disappear, they don't appear until the end of the study. So this is representative size of the tumor. This is control. This is oxaliplatin treated, somewhat smaller, but Io-125 is really, really tiny. Then this is up to the point where we could measure. After that, the tumor disappeared. And even though we could administer so much more of the drug compared to oxaliplatin, the body weight was not altered and none of the mice died. So remember, this was mouse TNBC grafted in mice. Of course, we are not going to treat mice, we are going to treat humans. So it's necessary to check the efficacy of the drug in human cells grafted in immunocompromised mice. So these are the data for that. So here, same experiment, excepting the TNBC is human. So this is the control. And in this study, we used a non-toxic dose of oxaliplatin so that we could follow the effect of oxaliplatin also over a long period of time. So from day 50, you can see that the tumors are shooting up, but two different dosing regimens of Io-125 causes considerable growth delay in a very, very aggressive cancer. And if you look, compare the percentage tumor growth inhibition, this is 60% tumor growth inhibition for the for the higher dosing regimen, and actually the tumors are growing beyond control in oxaliplatin treated group. The body weight is not affected. And even when you plot the survival of the mice, then Io-125 treated arm, none of the mice have died, but the control, because of the tumor burden, had to be removed from the study, and oxaliplatin also, because of the tumor burden, had to be removed from the study. So at least in TNBC, in mouse models, it's doing it's doing its job. And then I'll go a little bit into the details. So when you take the tumors and analyze the platinum content in these tumors, you digest the tumors and you estimate platinum with atomic absorption spectroscopy, there you see that Io-125 concentration is much, much higher in tumors than oxaliplatin. And then we took this DNA out of these tumors and then measured the platinum in the DNA. So the DNA platinum adduct formation is also much, much higher in Io-125 treated tumors versus oxaliplatin. And over here you can see that this is an assay for apoptosis. So basically the way the assay was done, any of the red signal that you see is coming from dying cells. So this is control tumor, and this is Io-125 treated tumor, and you can see that the cells are dying. So the Io-125 preferentially loads into the tumors, shows enhanced DNA binding and induces apoptosis. If you look at the tissue levels, nothing glaring looks from the IO-125 as far as kidney, liver, or lung is concerned. Everything is normal. With oxaliplatin, you see some tubular degeneration. In liver, you see some degeneration, and in lung, you see some hemorrhages. This is the tumor where you can, where in oxaliplatin treated group, you see well grown tumor cells, and in IO-125, you can see the tumor cells are dying. And not only are the tumor cells dying, where the arrow is shown, it is actually scar tissue forming where the tumor has died, tumor cells have died. And again, this is completely correlated with the amount of platinum that is loaded into the tumor as compared to oxaliplatin. So backed by this beautiful biology of our lead molecule, the next thing is obviously we have to do scale up, because right now we were at 10 gram scale at the lab. So we have to go for, we need to conduct the toxicology studies and to conduct the phase one of the clinical trial, we need 4 kilograms. So for that, we split our chemistry manufacturing controls roadmap into 4 phases. Ours is a 3-step synthesis. So the starting material needs to be generated, from which it's 3 steps to complex platinum and form IO-125. So here, this part, so you know, we looked at several ways of doing it. We took quotes and we visited places all over India. So contract manufacturing organizations all over India. And the confidence with synthesizing cholesterol tethered molecules with platinum was lacking, at least by our scientific due diligence, by our scientific team backed by Shadi. That was lacking, number one. Number two, you cannot believe their pricing. Their pricing is more than US, their pricing is more than Europe, and their pricing is obviously more than China. So again, you know, we have to look at our dwindling resources. So we basically looked at how we can make this without losing too much money. So the starting material that doesn't have to be, you know, hugely great in quality, we decided to synthesize in China. So that we made 10 kilograms of starting material. And then the IO-125 complexation, we have done the technology transfer, which means that our protocol has been completely reproduced in a company in Switzerland, and they are about to embark upon the 10 kg synthesis. What they are now trying to do is final, so they have achieved 95% purity. So through crystallization, they aim to achieve more than 99% purity. That is what we need for our studies. So when that is completed, then the large scale would be initiated and crystallized. And then finally, we have to do the formulation. And here we have found some Indian CROs who are capable of doing this and not charging us over the roof. So probably this part we can do in India, hopefully, fingers crossed. So this is the kind of profile we got from China. Excellent QC, analytic. Okay, sure. Analytical purity was more than 99%, and I had mentioned International Conference on Harmonization, all of the residual solvents were within limits. So this is the scale up and purification. This is what our drug looks like at the current scale that has been synthesized. And Invictus, whatever we were able to achieve in terms of yield or purity, that has been improved upon and will be further improved upon by the CMO. And we are getting consistent crystals also, so crystallization should also be not a problem. So what I want to share with you is that we have achieved a 3-step synthesis. This used to be a 10-step. We reduced it in our process development at Delhi with desired purity and yield, fully characterized molecule and finished formulation as per ICH guidelines. And we have even done the stability. So there are guidelines for conducting accelerated stability of these molecules for 6 months, which is indicative of 3 months shelf life. Okay. So all of this has done in a, you know, spending very little money and within a very short period of time. And what has happened is we couldn't have done it alone. And you know, there are many, many more collaborators, but I put the main ones over here who have, you know, who have converged and made this possible. So again, this is just the IO-125, but other than IO-125, just for IO-125 itself, for every aspect of it, we have patent filings. For our antibody drug conjugate, which is another pipeline, we also have patent filings, and for another molecule, another group of molecules that comprises of taxanes, kinase inhibitors, proteasome inhibitors, that also we have filed IP. And look at their exclusivity period. It goes well into the 2030s. Now, what it means is that this is the asset building of the company. Okay, so if we are to exit today, or if we are to go public after we've done our clinical trials, this is what is going to be the asset that is going to bring the valuation. And what will the valuation bring? More opportunity for doing research, right? So basically, we want to be able to take all of these as pipelines and make all of these possible. So this is our team. You know, Professor Mashalkar and Shiladitta, I've already talked about. Arindam, PhD from ISC Bangalore, and did his postdoc from UC Riverside. Samad is PhD from IICT Hyderabad. Pradeep is PhD from ICER Kolkata. Asif from NIPERG Mohali. Seema, she has done PhD from UMass Worcester. She's an Inspire faculty fellow. Nimish, who's from IIT Chennai and then did a master's in Rutgers and also worked in Regeneron for developing biologics in New York for 3 years. Now he's actually one of my PhD students under the India Innovation Research Center umbrella, which is our research wing. We have an MOU with Symbiosis International University, Pune. Prithvi did his PhD from NCL Pune and runs the computational department. Ravinder is from Pharma, Hiralal from NIPER Mohali, Anubhav PhD from IICT Hyderabad. Anuruddha PhD from JNU, then did his postdoc in NIH. Shelley PhD from National University Singapore. Shanghamitra spent years at UMass Worcester and is now currently doing PhD again at IIRC. And these are some of our consultants. Dr. Reena Patel is our IP advisor. Shudeep is also there. Shadeen from ICER Kolkata and Dr. Vil Pandian from AIMS. And Devashish Roy Choudhury, he is going to be the CEO of our company. He'll be engaging this year. He is MD from AIMS, and then he was the global chief of oncology of Sanofi Aventis in US. Now he runs his own consultancy. Barbara Bierer, he's the senior vice president of clinical research in Harvard. And Dr. Lalit Kumar, who is the head of the department of medical oncology at AIMS. So this is what Invictus building was. Basically, it was a gutkha factory. So it's kind of a poetic justice. This is to be the storage for gutkha that causes cancer. This is to be the entry. And now the entry looks like this, and that looks like this lab. So whatever caused cancer, we're trying to eradicate now. And all of this has happened with strong science, mainly collaborations. Hopefully we'll have some impact, and all of this has come to a convergence. And just one more note, and then I'll finish. I think cancer therapy should be available for all, accessible by all, not only by celebrities. It's great stories for their survivor, Lisa Ray and UV, but we want to continue to see the smiles on these faces also. So with this message, thank you.
One is, which is the binding site of your IO-125? Showed it for this platin. But even oxaliplatin, carboplatin, you look at the literature, you will never find out. It always says there's a DNA get distorted and replication and all. So have you done your IO-125 binding and...
I'm glad you asked that question. It's an extremely good question. Actually, you are absolutely correct that although oxaliplatin DNA crystal structures exist, what else oxaliplatin binds to is not there in literature. It is indicated that it binds to mitochondria also, and there could be several other ways of explaining the efficacy of oxaliplatin, and it may not be through just DNA binding. So for our IO-125, we are currently exploring the DNA binding. So we have some data of IO-125 binding the DNA, both simulation and we have a model compound that we have crystallized with a strand of DNA that was used for oxaliplatin crystals. But I cannot rule out the possibility of IO-125 interacting with other subcellular organelles or other targets. So that is definitely a very interesting question that we want to pursue.
No MM simulation.
No, we just tried to do the DNA binding in terms of the simulation, but for the other simulations we haven't done yet, but it is definitely planned.
The second thing is, you know, with IO-125 you showed necrosis. Don't you think necrosis is not exactly...
Apoptosis, it was a tunnel assay.
Necrosis over there.
No, oh, you mean the histology?
Yeah.
Yeah, so okay, got it. Let me just go back to the slide.
Maybe go to Bala and there's one question.
This one?
Yeah,
that's one. Yeah. So, see, here I'm sure, I mean, I don't have it over here. Actually, I can show you some data. This particular is just an H&E stain. Based on an H&E stain, I can only say death. Okay. But we have taken tumor tissue sections and done tunnel assay. Mm-hmm. And the tunnel assay is showing positive.
So, you still think apoptosis?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not ending necrosis.
No, so this is the pathologist report actually. Yeah, but we have also done tunnel assay of tissue section, which is positive.
Can you go to Allah?
I may have missed your answer already because I came in late. But how long is the process of approvals? I mean, approvals of all these research that you're doing is going to take some time, right?
You mean FDA approval for our drug?
Actually, we have that drug being useful to them.
Sorry.
When people are going to be able to use that drug, I mean, really.
See, the clinical trials is when the people enrolling in the clinical trials can use. So the clinical trials we are pitching for next year. So there is one barrier for that because it's an FDA implicated barrier. We have to show certain criteria in what is known as investigational new drug enabling studies. So to investigate the new drug, there are some enabling studies that have to be conducted according to FDA. So we have lined those up, but those results, I don't have them now. So based on what we have done, it should be fine. And you know, we are also working with consultants to help us work through that process. That is 6 months. Then what we do is we file an IND application with the FDA. They take a couple of months and they say, okay, you can run the clinical trial. And then in 2017, we plan to do the phase 1 clinical trial. Obviously, only those patients who are enrolling in the clinical trial will get the drug, right? So phase 1 will run for a year. Phase 2 will run for a year. Phase 3 is when thousands of people can enroll. So at least I would say 3 years from now, if everything is fine.
Yeah. So you mentioned you had a 5 crore initial grant. Where did it come from, and where do you expect the next?
Oh, all of this work was not possible with just 5 crores. I didn't mention the other that came. So basically, we don't have a grant. We have only one grant from DBT, which was for 21 lakhs. Okay. So, and that grant, for that 21 lakhs, we had to give this agreement that half, 50% of the intellectual property ownership is DBT's. Okay, so that's why we have not written for grants, because it's really not possible. The only asset that we have is the IP. We cannot
initial five.
Yeah, so I'm telling you, so the 5 crore we got from 2 VC, initial 5 crore we got from 1 VC, Kolkata based VC, Navam Capital. Then we were funded for 20 CR venture capitalist. People with money. People with money.
I don't know if he's our vice chancellor.
The vice chancellors who have a lot of money. And then we got another 20 CR from Navam Capital and Manipal Group, Ranjan Pai and Mohandas Pai, who run Manipal University. So that's the only funding we have.
But don't they also get the IPR rights, the VC people? You know, after all, they are...
This is, I gave you very confidential information that this is the amount of money that we have been given, total.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something which I'm sure you have in mind too. The other anti-cancer drugs, for example, cyclophosphamide-based drugs or taxol-based drugs. How about?
Yeah. So, yeah, we plan to do cyclophosphamide. We have don't have a plan yet, but the IO-500 that I talked about, that is basically taxane. We are trying taxane and kinase inhibitors and proteasome inhibitors. So cyclophosphamide is not in our plan yet, but the whole idea is it can be done with any drug.
Cyclophosphamide is a lot of biology and chemistry work that has been done on the drug.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many analogues of cyclophosphamide that are, I'm sure, in trial.
Mm-hmm.
Already has a line of people.
So do you know of the negative effects of cyclophosphamide, the ones that are being used in clinic?
There are issues about nausea and those things, but I'm not sure whether the last that I heard was, the last analog that I heard was mefosamide, which had reduced these side effects to some extent, but
yeah.
The current literature on...
See, when we did our analysis of drugs that have maximal toxicity, or you know, some other drugs also have metabolic issues, they get metabolized too quickly. So if we put it in a super molecule, it will not get metabolized, okay, and will be delivered. So when we did our analysis, cyclophosphamide did not come up. So I will definitely look into it. Yeah. Yeah. Ifosfamide.
Yeah, ifosfamide is another one. There are a couple more.
Yeah, I'll definitely look into it. Good point.
Okay, great. If there are no more questions, then let's thank Munidipa for a great talk. And we'll join her for tea.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. It has been a wonderful experience for me. Thank you.
It was really nice. I think people...